Testing.
It's already connected.
Oh.
Well?
Well, I was thinking.
And, this is like a passing show, you know, one generation, and then I notice another generation, and then a third generation, and, I used to go out to my fraternity house, across the hall, to mingle with the kids, and because it kind of refresh you, and their youth, you know, and their excitement, but when the time came when I didn't want to go anymore because they're so far removed, you know. They want to go, look, what's this guy doing, you know, is he still living and he's walking around and there was just no lesion between the kids out there and my generation. And I mean, the way they look at you, you know, when you come in, you know, this octogenarian.
Yeah. Were you born in Crawfordsville?
Yeah. I was born in that house.
In the house. What is the number over there for?
313.
313.
And I sold
it. East Wabash.
Well, I'm sorry I sold it. Because it was so beautifully furnished.
Yes.
And it was expensive. You know, the heat bill was high. Everything was kind of high.
And who were your parents?
Who were my parents?
Who were your parents?
Oh, my father was a doctor, a gynecologist. But he never practiced during my lifetime.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I understand he practiced in New Richmond at one time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was in Newtown, and I don't know why he gave up practice, but he just got interested in business, in industry, and he one time owned part of the old wire mill, now it's called the...
was it Mid-States or?
Mid-States, yeah, it's called Mid-States now. And he had an office in the Ben-Hur building, and he got interested in farms, and he thought that was just about the best investment there was. Well, it proved to be about the worst.
About time.
And, yeah, they kept going down in the valley, down and down. And, as I say, I used to play in this neighborhood a lot, all over this neighborhood, and especially Old Lanes. And I'd go over there as a kid, 6 years old, maybe I was, or seven. And the Lane place was just white with spring beauties.
You remember Mrs. Lane?
Oh, yes, quite well. And mention an anecdote. One day she was sitting out on the front porch and quite dressed in her summer dress. And I was picking violets with a cousin of mine. And then we decided we ought to go up and speak to Mrs. Lane, so we went up and she was very courteous and nice to us. And finally I spoke up and I said, Mrs. Lane, how old are you? Well, I had a terrific daughter. I don't know, but children, you know, have nothing but truth. And she said, how old do you think I am? I said, well, I think you're about 50. And my cousin spoke up, oh, lady, she's at least 100. And we went away about that time. My father built a house in, up in Michigan, a cottage right on the shore of Lake Michigan, Ludington, Michigan.
Ludington.
Uh-huh. And the only way you could get there was by boat. They had boats. And we went every summer, and it never, that was a pretty good place for an artist to work, but I never dreamed of doing anything like that. And my father couldn't understand artists at all. He just didn't have any patience with them. He just thought they didn't do anything.
He didn't encourage you to
be an artist? Oh, no. He discouraged me. And he was, when he'd see me drawing or something, you know, he didn't like it at all. And I was 35 years old before I remotely considered drawing. And, Mr. Flemmer, Fritz Flemmer, that he persisted in on my taking some lessons, and pretty soon I liked that feeling. And but he was a wonderful artist, really, and
wonderful teacher too.
Yeah, he was a dandy. Oh yes, wonderful teacher. Did you have any lessons with him?
I did. When I was a teenager, I had drawing lessons.
Oh.
I always regretted that I didn't get to take painting.
Yeah.
You took painting lessons in the 20s?
Mm-hmm.
Was that in the 1920s or 30s?
No, the 30s.
The 30s.
Mm-hmm. The 30s. And
then you painted
it. Kind of demurred about taking up artist professions. I said, "Well, Fritz, I don't think I can make a living at it." And he said, "Well, what do you want? You want money, or do you want prominence, or you want to leave something to posterity?" He says, "You ever consider that? Leaving something that not taking, most people take. Take, you know, and get all they can, and salary and commission." He said, "Think about leaving something to society." I said, "Well, no, I never thought of that. I don't have anything to leave, you know." He said,
"That sounds like this."
Sounded like it. He was a socialist, that's what. Yeah. And one year the government had a program. During the bad depression, and
at the WPA.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they had a fund for artists, as kind of a meager sum that they would pay for paintings. And we did about 8 or 10 paintings. For WPA, and they were just beautiful.
What did he do for those paintings?
They were seen around Crawfordville. And the countryside, and of course we did fruit trees, and then he did some downtown scenes that were just, it was so quaint and typical. Well, Indiana town scene that I thought were really great. And they became quite well known, that is, they were, Washington took them and hung them in different buildings down there.
In Washington?
Washington, D.C., yeah.
Do you know which ones?
Well, there's one in the Supreme Court building, that's right.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And it was what he did just out here on Main Street. Yeah, it was so provincial and homey and small townish, you know. And See, we went and then we went to our cottage in the summertime with the ladies.
Where did you take the boat from?
From Chicago. The overnight ship. And I just thought we'd go to the end of the world, you know. And the only way you could get there.
And you go by train to Chicago?
Well, yeah, I got on a train to Chicago. And then by 1920, why, there were roads. And I love the fish. I fish every summer.
Did you participate in the WPA program? Did you do work with the WPA program on artists then?
I didn't know.
No, you didn't.
I didn't know.
One thing I've often wondered, with all the artists that were in Crawfordsville, why an outsider did the murals for the post office? What was his name? You remember?
I can't remember.
Long? Wasn't it Long?
Yes, I think so.
I remember when you made that one. And, but he never even contacted a Crawfordsville artist for that. It was an inside kind of inside job that he did in different towns. And I got a big kick out of it. They were distorted. His animals, he never saw such animals, and wolves and pigs and cows, and they never looked like that.
Sort of an Al Greco effect, huh? Making them too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're elongated. And the pigs had funny wrinkles where they never had them before.
Well, how did he manage to get the contract to do all that? Politically, you think?
I don't know, politics. Somebody there, other day for the artists were about, you know, stars. Anything they could get a hold of. And then, Rich was a wonderful portrait painter, I thought. And he had a quality, his portraits were just beautiful. And yet, they lacked a little accuracy, I thought. And when he started teaching me why I was a little more accurate, apparently. I would even count the eyelashes. And he said, now you don't have to put out every pimple and mole and just get the general character. And I thought that's not that portrait work. People want to see how they do look, you know.
Did you paint this portrait in the room here?
Yes.
Who is that?
That's my sister.
Oh, yes.
That's your sister.
I recognize it.
That's a lovely painting.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you.
You remember that I used to live next door?
No.
25 years ago.
Where the Reams lived?
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
We bought it from after Mrs. Roundtree died.
Oh, yeah.
Jean said she regretted seeing the porch taken off there.
Yeah.
She's sorry,
yeah,
that's gone.
We had a porch in my house over there that was really a Lulu. It was a Japanese pagoda.
Oh. When was that changed?
Oh, that was 1910.
I was going to say, I didn't remember it.
No, I don't remember seeing
it. And my mother just finally got tired of it. It had a curved roof, you know.
Just the porch?
Yeah, two.
Will you move your house?
Okay, can you?
Oh, I'm sorry, we got too much stuff.
Well, I love this little collection of elephants.
I remember these.
Oh, yeah.
From when I used to be here 25 years ago.
I'll just
put these little.
A recollection of incidents. That were, I thought, kind of funny.
Thank you.
And, I guess we should.
About the Elsons. And whether you want
to
mention that or not. But, Mrs. Elson will probably kill me if she ever heard.
Now, this is Florence?
Yeah, Florence. And Funny thing about Florence, or rather I thought it was a musician, in my senior year at Wabash, I had a date with Florence. And she was even then a little older than I was, so I don't know how old she is now.
I think she's right about your age.
Yeah, I think so. And
sweet woman.
Funny things have happened about Ike.
Go ahead.
One time he moved to Chicago strictly on business and forget that town just outside Chicago where he lived, and Florence Elson came from there. What is that?
Winnetka or
what?
Wilmette or Winnetka or
what?
She says Wilmette or Winnetka.
South edge of Chicago. Pretty good sized town. Well, he moved there with his wife Pearl, and they bought a house in a socially prominent place because he was getting wealthy then, and so he moved to a very snooty neighborhood. And he was driving a Rolls Royce at that time. He had a chauffeur that wore a uniform. And he noticed that the lady next door, who was rather socially known, had nothing to do with him at all. She wouldn't speak to him or call on him. And so Ike is kind of vengeful, he was at that time. And so he thought, I'll fix that. And so he told his chauffeur to go to Marshall Fields. I want to say that the lady next door appeared one day in a new sealskin coat. They wore sealskin then. And so he told his chauffeur, he sent him to Chicago to Marshall Fields, said, get a sealskin coat. And so he did, he wore it all the time, the chauffeur did, so the woman, but she never appeared again in a sealskin coat. And another thing I remember, he lived in Philadelphia, and early in his career, I guess, he was married then, but after work, 5 o'clock, he went to a bar where the socially prominent people went, I guess, the man, the businessman, wealthy man, and they just didn't have much to do with him. He was a little bit crude, I guess. But there was one man there who finally got friendly with Ike and said, see, I have to go to Chicago and on business. And what's it like? He said, I'm kind of afraid to go to Chicago. And did you know of any place I could stay? And I said, oh, yes. You want to go to the Everly Club, the Everly Sisters. I had a house of prostitution in Chicago. So, sure enough, he did go and went there, and he thought it was very strange going. And I guess he stayed maybe one night, and became known, and he was engaged to be married, and that broke his engagement right away, and I thought that was, Ike was kind of vengeful that way, being really mean.
Sounds like he liked to play pranks.
Yes, it certainly does.
I remember my folks had a little apartment in Florida in 1925, this was. And Ike was, you bought this beautiful palace on the, right on the ocean front, and which is a big hotel there now. But oh, it was a beautiful place. And
on the ocean, where?
At Miami Beach, in Miami Beach.
Those days, that was a beautiful place.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and it was just, you know, it was just almost in the surf. And it's so close to the ocean. And it was had a beautiful upstairs lounge and sitting room. Looked right out on the Gulf Stream. And Ike invited us over there for Christmas dinner that day. Mother, myself, my mother, and that's all. And Dad, of course. And when he arrived, they were all singing Christmas carols. We had a whole room full of guests. And my father would, he would rather, you know, run away than touch a drop of liquor at that time. He was a prohibitionist. And, but they were all having a big, you know, a kind of a rowdy time. And he brought Mother a little glass of orange juice, I think. He knew she didn't drink anything. And, but I decided to try the cocktails, but it was eggnog. And, he had a Swedish cook at that time, wonderful cook, and she made the eggnog. Well, he brought me a cup, and I took a sip. And it was just like you had a sharp knife and just cut your tongue. And it, oh boy, it was strong. And but here came Mike with another bottle of liquor and poured it up, and poured it even made it stronger. You know? Well. Right, we had Christmas dinner, and right after dinner, why a slave delivery postman arrived, and I said, "Well, let's see what we got here." And someone that you call was standing the most beautiful set of cocktail glasses you ever saw, long-stemmed glasses that. And they were solid gold rimmed, about a dozen of them. Well, I said, well, we better have some cocktail, use the glasses. And he had, there was a flight of stairs, long, you know, very broad stairs that went up to the upstairs sitting room. And so, he said, well, we gotta have another drink. And so he filled all those glasses, whole tray full of them. And up he started, and he got about halfway up, and he stubbed his toe, and crash, down they all came, you know. And I thought, oh, my guys are gold cocktail rim glasses. And well, says, we gotta have some more. So he found some more glasses. And so he was a, he just bought a new Rolls Royce. And he said to me, and he was driving a Lincoln prior to that. And he said to his chauffeur, Billy, he said, "Oh, Billy, what do we do with the Lincoln? We haven't got room for it in the garage." And Billy said, "I don't know what to do with it." He said, "Well, I'll just give it to you, Billy." So he gave it to me for Christmas present. What the elf could do.
To change the subject, I heard a story about Fred Vance living back down here, and how you saw what happened to his paintings. Could you tell us that?
When they sold the house, Do you remember?
I remember the house well.
Right. When I talked to you before, thank you. It's a wonderful teapot. They took what was left in his attic and just pitched them out in the trash.
Yeah, burned them. One of the greatest crimes. You know, how people could be so insensitive, even ignorant people could. How they could do that, I don't know. But I remember Mrs. Vance quite well, and she sang in the Methodist Church on Sundays in the choir. And I don't know how many years, quite a few years.
What was her first name? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
But they lived, that was her house on Wallace?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you know him too? Or?
Yeah, I knew him.
Well,
I didn't see him very much, but he did some painting in our house over there, on the walls, on the inside, the murals. You know.
You said they were painted over, didn't you?
Yeah.
There was one on the ceiling. Was there one on the ceiling?
Well,
or was it on the wall?
Almost, not quite.
Mm-hmm.
The upper wall. But they were fruit paintings, fruit trees, and blossoms. And they were awfully good. And his technique was a kind of full brush technique, the wet brush. With oils in there, you know, rust and baby when they got...
Sort of impressionist, kind of an impressionist style?
Well, really, well, very realistic. But they had ample paint on them.
Uh-huh.
Kind of rigid and, you know, full.
Oh.
Fingers and full painting. He was very talented.
He was quite a muralist. He painted other murals, didn't he?
And he did the murals in the home.
Those are lost, I guess.
Well, they took them down. I never didn't think they were Fritz's or Vance's best work.
Well, that's good to know, since nobody can find them.
I think they kept them until they tore the building down. Or no, they didn't tear it down, did they?
No, they remodeled it.
Yeah.
For the construction company that owns it.
Yeah.
Is that when the murals disappeared?
That's when the murals were in the attic for a time, and then they were put in a storage building, and then nobody has been able to find them since then.
Uh-huh.
But they're at Mary Virginia's attic.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. She has an amazing attic.
But we'll find some things, too, if you anything.